Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs, and it is the 23rd of February, 2022. Welcome to today's Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio Show. One of two we did. We just did an excellent show about SEL training for teachers, okay, which was really cool, okay, and now we're following that one up with a great show for my good friends over at the American Association of School Administrators, the School Superintendents Association, and we're going to talk about their early learning cohort and their early learning toolkit. And we have some great experts in the field. We have the one, I'll bring them all on in a second. We have the one and only Eddie Manusak, who's the superintendent at Dundee Community Schools in Michigan. Peter Finch, okay, who'll be joining us from West Valley Schools in Yakima, Washington. He's superintendent there. And the rose among the thorns is Deb Bergeron, who's the deputy director for community engagement over at the National Head Start Foundation. We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. You go over there, you'll be able to click on the cover of our magazine, Equity and Access, and read a great issue, which is terrific, our online journal, all about equity and access. All of our podcasts are over there at ace-ed.org, and a ton of other information, and a link to our new website, which is called SEL Today, seltoday.org, which is obviously about social-emotional learning. So please check it all out. You can just go over to ace-ed.org, and it'll take you everywhere you need to go in the world and keep you busy for at least a couple of hours, or less if you want. Let me bring on my guests. We're going to start ladies first. As I mentioned, the rose amongst the thorns. Good morning, Deb. I'm Larry Jacobs.
Good morning, Larry. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you? Everything good?
Everything's great. I love being called a rose.
You are the rose. You are the rose. Deb is the deputy. Deb, she is the... Let me sing to you, Rose, near, far, wherever you are now. Deputy Director for Community Engagement and Innovation at the National Head Start Foundation. Okay, that's fantastic. And I'll go to Peter, go all the way out to the West Coast. Peter, good morning, my friend. How are you today?
Good morning. We're coast to coast.
We are. I'm in Maine, but I'm going to make it 75. This is February 23rd. It's 75 degrees outside. I'm literally watching the great glacier that is my front lawn here in Maine recede. Okay? It is 75 degrees, and we're supposed to get 12 inches of snow on Friday. Today's Wednesday. Don't figure this out. Okay? So anyway, welcome to my world. Peter, it's great to have you here. Okay? And we'll let you describe West Valley in just a second, but I want to go and say hello to my other friend, Eddie Manusak, the incredible Eddie Manusak from Dundee Community Schools in Dundee, Michigan. Hello, Eddie. Welcome back.
Hey, Eddie, as always, Larry, a pleasure to be on your show. What an honor. I know we're thrilled to be here. So thank you so much.
Well, the honor, my friend, is mine. Okay. Deb, before we get into the early, and again, AASA, thank you so much, Jimmy Minicello, for helping me put the show together. Deb, just tell everybody, and they know, but you're the Director for Community Engagement Innovation. Just tell everybody a quick rundown of National Head Start Foundation.
So the National Head Start Association is really representative of all the Head Start and Early Head Start programs throughout the country, supports over 300 staff and over a million kiddos who attend those programs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It's huge. Is it association or foundation? What's that last word?
It's an association. It's a membership association.
Blame Jimmy Minicello. He wrote foundation. Okay, so Jimmy.
Nobody can.
I hope he's listening.
Nobody should
Jimmy.
Blame Jimmy.
Yeah,
Jimmy, I hope he's Jimmy. Don't blame Jimmy.
I also blame him for Putin moving into the Ukraine. Okay, I also blame Jimmy Minicello. Okay, his fault. Okay. National Head Start Association, everybody. Okay, Peter, tell us about West Valley Schools in Yakima, Washington.
Well, it's great to be on your show again. And
It's Larry. I don't know how you messed that one up. It's Larry. I know. Yeah.
So, great.
You threw him off with all the Ukraine talk.
Last time I was assistant superintendent, and now they move me into superintendent here.
I know.
This is my 21st. Yeah, thanks. 21st year in West Valley. So West Valley is in Central Washington State. We're west of Yakima. We actually are in the city limits, and we go all the way west up into the Cascade Mountains. So we have some very rural and remote areas of our district, but we have high achievement across the board, and all six of our elementary schools have been recognized by the state for high achievement.
Yep.
So very proud of the work that we've been doing in West Valley and our focus on early learning.
And also a very diverse, if I may, school district. I do know that. Okay, beautifully diverse, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, West Valley Schools in Yakima. Eddie, do it. Can you top Peter? Talk about Dundee Community Schools in Dundee, Michigan.
I cannot top my good friend Peter, but I will do my best to describe my amazing school district, Dundee Community Schools in Dundee, Michigan. We're a rural district, 73 square miles. Just over 1,800 students in our district, very small district, but we're very proud. And we are elementary school. We have early Head Start, and we also have a state-run four-year-old preschool program called Great Start there. And we have young fives and kindergarten, and try and offer a diverse range of programs for the families we serve. And we also have a county early childhood plan that is modeled after the Buffett Early Childhood Institute's plan out of Omaha, Nebraska, where the 10 districts in Monroe County are working together to meet the needs of our birth through age three families as well. So we're very proud of that.
As well you should be. And I have to mention something else, Eddie, which always fascinates me about you. Eddie, you were a teacher. What did you teach? You're superintendent now. You were a teacher. What did you teach?
So I started out as a preschool teacher. I taught kindergarten, taught first grade. That's where my passion lies. So if anyone follows me on Twitter, on Manuzak, at Manuzak Edwards, they'll see that I try to read these classes as much as possible. And still teaching is an innate quality that I think I share along with Peter and Deb. I know we all are teachers at heart. Even you, Larry, are a teacher at heart.
Even me. I was a teacher.
That's right.
Okay. I taught social studies, for years. Okay. And Eddie is the only kindergarten. First of all, male kindergarten teachers and preschool teachers are rare. Okay. And then to have Eddie going to become the superintendent, it's just an amazing trajectory, Eddie. I mean, you bring that love of early learning, and other superintendents have that too, but they don't have that first-hand experience like you do. Okay, and it's just an estate. I always am just fascinated by it. And by the way, my partner in this, as you guys know, is Maya Appleby. When I told her yesterday that I was going to bring Eddie onto the show, she said, "Oh, I love Eddie," so she wanted me to say hello.
Everybody loves Eddie.
Everybody loves Eddie. That's next year's big TV show, I think. Everybody loves Eddie.
Maya is a tremendous person herself. So thank you, Maya.
Oh, yeah, she is great, I got to tell you. Okay? And by the way, I'll just say this. And everything that we do at ace-ed.org that you see is Maya. Okay? She's just astounding. I just want to tell everybody that. Okay, moving right along. Okay, the Early Childhood and Learning Toolkit. And I think I'll start with Peter on this one. Peter, why is it a must-have for every school system in America, okay, to grab onto this toolkit that AASA has put together with the help of 20 organizations, I might add, one of them obviously being Head Start? Why is it a must-have for every school system? Just give the theory. Okay, of early learning. Go for it.
Well, first, just like you opened up EduTalk, it's a pre-K through 12 system.
Yeah.
It's not K through 12. If you're thinking K-12, out, because kids come
Thank
to school with prior knowledge, and the development of the brain before kindergarten is just tremendous. And so we want students to enter kindergarten ready to learn, and to have the executive function skills and the social-emotional learning foundation so that they can build on that and have strong academic skills as well. So, reaching out to our early learning partners is so important, and reaching out to families and having a great relationship with families as they enter the door, so we can build on that strong relationship. It's really a focus here in West Valley, and it really should be a focus across the nation.
And how long, Peter, have you guys really – put a giant effort into pre-K? I'll just say pre-K. How long have you done? Yeah.
Well, we actually, in my second year here, so that's over about 20 years ago, We started with a home visiting program to do outreach to families and bring a educational book or educational toy to the home and model that with the family and to you know, build those relationships. But ever since then, we've really been growing and really made a big focus. You know, quite frankly, is we ramped up things as we joined the AASA Early Learning Cohort. You talked about the toolkit that's just released last week. Everyone can access that. It's for free. It's online. All you have to do is Google AASA Early Learning Cohort, and then the toolkit is right there. The toolkit has 7 strategies. It's very simple to understand this framework, but if you implement those strategies, you're going to have a great improvement. I always, you know, like to brag a little bit here about as kids come into kindergarten in West Valley, we're able to take them to their next level of learning. So 3 out of our 6 elementary schools in the past couple of years have had 100% of their kindergarten students reading at grade level in the spring, and I attribute that to all this great work that's been focused on early learning. We even had, during the pandemic, one of our schools had 100% last spring, even during the pandemic. So we're getting results, and I really encourage everyone. You know, it's what's best for kids and best for families. Focus on early learning. Get them on a trajectory of success for their entire career and beyond. The research is clear. There's been several longitudinal studies, and it shows that a focus on early learning has incredible outcomes for students and their future and even their postgraduate future. So it's really building our society, building healthy communities, and it all starts with having a focus on early learning.
And it's amazing. And you know, I got to tell you, and I'm much older than you. I'm probably older than you 3 put together. Okay, if you add it all up, I'd still be senior. Okay, at least I feel that way some mornings. And I got to say, when I started school back, you know, I won't even say the year, but it was in the 1900s. I'll say that. Okay, and when I started, believe me, there was no school before kindergarten. And kindergarten in Philadelphia, where I grew up, started at 5 years old, okay? And literally, we knew nothing until we walked in the door of kindergarten. And we all got through, and that was the way it was back then. But we suddenly realized, and Peter hit the nail on the head, the brain develops before that, is developing before that. And we have to take advantage of that so we make sure every kid has equity and access to learning and grade level learning. And it's just so darn important. And the difference is, look how well we do now, okay, versus what we were doing before. And it's just something everybody has to grab onto. Eddie, I want to ask you this before I swing back to Deb. Okay, Eddie, talk to me about the cost of doing this, okay, that kind of thing. Because I don't know when you guys all know your fellow superintendents. Most school districts, okay, really, they superintendents know how important pre-K is, and everybody seems to understand that. But there was a affordability here. And just talk about that in relation to the toolkit. Because I know you're from the world's wealthiest district. Am I correct? Dundee, Michigan.
No,
district in the country, I believe.
We are not. I know. And we really need to change that narrative from referring to our schools as K-12 districts to P-20 institutions. And when I say P, I mean prenatal. And the threat that I see, too, like you had mentioned, I know that you are a big proponent of, is promoting equity from the start, you know. And we have to make sure that our colleagues around the nation realize that we have to flip the narrative. Typically, if you think of a pyramid, right, and you have a pyramid at the top, typically that little apex at the top is what, okay, well, that's how much we spend on early childhood program, is that little amount. And then as the pyramid grows bigger toward the base, then, that larger amount then becomes the amount that you end up as a school district traditionally paying more for. But the issue is you need to turn that pyramid upside down. You really should be spending a lot of your money in the pre-K environment.
Yeah.
And that goes through engagement, even as early as birth through 3. You need to know and engage those families early so that you know, a child's brain develops, 90% of it's developed by the age of five. And if you wait until kindergarten, where your first impression is going to be with that family, you've missed a great opportunity to have an impact.
That's right.
And so, you know, offering those programs that, you know, from a preschool program to early Head Start to Head Start, if your state has a state-run preschool program, and then coordinating home visits and play groups and making sure that you're infusing other community agencies. Honestly, Larry, it's about time investment, and you have to make sure for superintendents and others around the nation, time is very precious, especially now, but this is time well spent. And you need to make sure that the old saying of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, that's
right.
Where we are with this.
I always use the analogy. Do you remember the old Fram oil filter commercial where you could change your oil filter or not? The line was you can pay me $50 now or $300 later.
Yeah.
You know?
Pay me now, pay me later.
You know,
that's
and
right.
people,
right.
the communities, people, all students – remember best because it was the last thing, so to speak. Okay, they remember best their high school experience. Okay, but it's up to educators to communicate to the community how important it is. Okay, for early learning. All right, and believe me, that's going to make the difference in the long run. Deb, how did you get involved with all this? National Head Start Association getting involved with AASA.
So I was actually a K-12 person for most of my career, and then in 2018 was asked to lead the Office of Head Start for the last administration. And at the same time, this cohort was forming, and the executive director of NHSA, Yasmina Vinci, went to their first meeting. So sort of in parallel, I started reaching out to AASA to better connect Head Start and early Head Start with the school systems, really seeing that very fractured where some Head Starts have very poor or no relationship with their school systems. It's hard sometimes to get that going. And Eddie does such a beautiful job of that, and so does Peter. And really the cohort members in general are just the bellwether to follow. And so just becoming part of this cohort was a natural fit in trying to create a better bridge from early learning, specifically Head Start, into the school systems. And finding what Head Start has to offer, because Head Start's been around a long time, and there's a lot of things that we've developed over the decades that I think school systems can just take and use. It's all there. It's public domains, and you'll notice in the toolkit, one of the big things that we contributed was family engagement. It's one of the things Head Start does really well. And so as school systems are scratching their heads saying, well, how do we do this? They don't need to reinvent the wheel. It's all there. And you know, it can save them some time and money, and everybody get on the same page instead of just creating disparate systems that somehow are supposed to work together, which is a really big challenge.
It really is. And I want to say something else. We can't have education by zip code. Okay? It's just we just can't do that. And this is another thing that creates a better overall view. Deb, I don't know whether to ask you this or I'll ask Eddie. I'll start with Deb. Deb, who are the other partners besides Head Start? Do you know, or should I ask Eddie that?
Can list all of them. I know the primary partner for the early learning cohort is an organization called Waterford, and they have a wonderful program called Upstart that is early literacy oriented. But Eddie might want to talk about some of the other partners that made the toolkit really
and
vital.
I just have to say, I didn't want it to be a commercial. Waterford Institute is one of my very close friends within the education industry. They work with us all the time here, and they're at waterford.org. And I know I'm preaching to the choir because everybody who's listening to this show better already know about waterford.org. Okay, but we do a lot of work with them. Thank you for mentioning them. Eddie, who else? Yeah, thank you, Deb.
So another big partner that helped bring the toolkit, the printed toolkit, to the masses last week at our national conference was First Book. And First Book is a national nonprofit that was co-founded by Kyle Zimmer. And this is an agency that provides resources literature and material to teachers to get in the hands of their students. And they act as an agency where they can because of their mass buying ability, give things away for free. And they have over 500,000 active members that participate in survey results on behalf of teachers across the nation. And they then survey staff and provide data points to other national ed organizations and think tanks to give us insights as to how we can best help our staff and teachers as a nation in meeting the needs of our students. And equity is at the thread of what they do. So they're an amazing organization. And then, of course, as Deb had mentioned, the Office of Head Start and then the Hunt Institute is another partner. We have Foundations Incorporated, the CCSSO, the National Association for the Elementary School Principals, the Bezos Family Foundation with Ellen Galinsky. She was a contributor to the toolkit. And then we have the Buffett Early Childhood Institute, the Ed Council. We have New America. You know, the list, there's 20 national ed organizations that we're so proud to have had their input, because it's pretty rare to have this type of collaboration on this large of a project come together, and then for those agencies to agree, like Christy Cowartz from the National P3 Center, big partner in this work, you know. And so we're very proud to have a lot of voices, and it's not just a vacuum that's come together to do this. We have a lot of reach and breadth with the partners that helped us form these seven essential strategies.
And I think the really important thing to note about that is that that means any superintendent can pick this up, and regardless of his or her school system demographics, size, location, they're going to find some answers in here that are relevant. And that's what I love about the fact that the partnership is so dynamic.
It really and truly is, okay? It's just incredibly dynamic. And, Peter, you're going to be hosting a cohort meeting at Yakima, aren't you, at West Valley?
Yep. We go across the nation and have opportunities to get into classrooms and to take away from our visits, you know, hey, here's what's happening in this district, in this classroom. Is that relevant to my work in my district? And so we're really honored to be able to host the cohort coming up in May. You know, we're always looking to get better. So, you know, this year we've made improvements in our system in early learning this year. I always encourage, you know, superintendents to start. You know, it's time to start this work on early learning. We use 30, 60, 90-day plans to help guide our work. So in the next 30 days, what am I going to do to advance this work and then celebrate the success? Hey, we made some progress here in the last 30 days. So, you know, this semester is coming up, 30, 60, 90. We got March, April, May. You know, what are we going to do here from now until the end of the school year to advance this work? In West Valley this year, we've advanced the work by having play and learn groups at all of our elementary schools. We had a couple of schools, and we saw what a great impact it's having on families. In fact, Deb Bergeron there, she's very humble. Her work at the as a director of Head Start for the Nation, she pulled together districts, school districts, and early Head Start providers, and had what was called a collaboration demonstration project from districts across the nation. And then in Washington State, they replicated that with their 100 Schools Project. And one of the parents from West Valley wound up presenting at the state conference about how all this outreach to families made a huge impact on her and her family. And actually, she became a teacher in Head Start because of that. And her child now is an eighth grader and is getting straight A's and just doing great. So these success stories, it's real. It's
there
real.
There you go.
And so play and learn is where you bring family in and do fun it's fun activities, get them in the door, and then you can give them additional resources once you have them in the door. The other thing that we're doing is really focus on student ownership for learning and that executive function, giving kids choices. And so we actually have a badge book where kids are working their way through the standards at their own pace. We have that in pre-K, kinder, and first. And then we're piloting this year is the advancement. We're going to go second grade here in the second semester. And we've got the badge book ready to roll. And we actually have a first grade. We have twins in first grade that have already gone through the whole first grade badge book. And thank goodness we got the second grade in development, because we handed that to the second grade, and they're going through the second grade standards now. So it's just, you know, really the other thing I'm starting to roll to grow on here, but having Ellen Galinsky this year, we have access to some of the greatest thinkers in the nation. So in the cohort, we've had sessions with Ellen Galinsky, and really excited about her work in Mind in the Making. And let me just read off these aspects that she talks about building in early learning classrooms, and think about what are the skills that our workers need for the 21st century to be successful. Focus and self-control, perspective taking, communicating, making connections, critical thinking, taking on challenges, self-directed, engaged learning. I mean, that's what employers are looking for, and that's what her focus has been on helping us to how do we start that from the beginning in early learning and then just work that through our whole system.
And you know, it's interesting that you say that because we're talking about early learning, then you talk about workplace. We're not talking about sending kids to the coal mines or the apple fields. Okay, we're not talking about that. Okay, we expect it to happen in a little while. Okay, but the way I always think of education, pre-K-12 education, public education, is to create good citizens, to create good thinkers, okay, and to create a future workforce. Okay, that's the way I look at it. Okay, it's a three-pronged effort, and I think it's a very important effort, obviously, all right? And I'm just curious, all those things you mentioned, Peter, both all of you can answer. Actually, I'll ask Eddie this one, okay, based on what Peter said. Eddie, all right, well, those things that he mentioned, okay, are very much our SEL, social-emotional learning, which I don't want to become a buzzword. It's an incredibly important thing, and everybody might want to listen to the show I did just before this all about that worldwide. They see it through UNESCO as a worldwide thing, all right? Where does that SEL come into early learning? And Peter touched on this, okay, as he went down that list. Can you speak on that one?
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, social-emotional learning is the hub of what we need, and that's what's caused this major issue in preschool in the nation, because when you had to switch to remote learning, the interconnectedness didn't occur. And so last week at our national conference, Tim Shriver, just a really great friend of the AASA, he presented on some topics associated with SEL. And one of the things he mentioned was James Comer. You remember James Comer, wonderful researcher? He said that it's all about relationships and building. And then Dr. Kuhl, who is a perimenal expert in 0 to 3 ages, he showed this the research that, you know, given the chance when they're, you know, at that toddler age, from birth through toddler age, if they're given a screen to look at, they aren't learning. That isn't happening. It's the physical connection that they make with that caregiver, with their mom, with their dad, with the grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, older brother, older sister, playmate. However that is made, it has to be done, you know, face-to-face, in person. And the hard part, Larry, is this. We have to also flip the narrative. I know Build Back Better tried to address this, and out of the ashes of that, the federal legislation, it seems like it's not going anywhere. But we need to rewrite the script on how much are we paying those individuals that are professionals working with our children who are, you know, birth through age 3. They need to be in a category where we're able to compensate them and on a level where they're not having to put additional, you know, food stamps to make their family work. They should be compensated at a level to get them elevated to that point. And the thing I know that Deb agrees with 100% is the fact that that's what we love about Head Start. That, and I know, Deb, this is your saying because you're the one that shared it with us at a cohort meeting many times ago. There's an arrow that points up, and it's a program that's elevating everyone out of poverty. Your zip code should not define your access to an education that is able to be done. And so Head Start works not just with the child, but they work with the family to raise the entire family out of that lower socioeconomic status bracket. And the number of staff that, you know, start as parents and then transition into staff in Head Start is staggering. So just really proud of, you know, the partners that we have along the way. I don't know, Deb, if you wanted to expound on that at all either.
Well, actually, Deb, I do want you to expound on that. Thank you, Eddie, by the way. And I also want you to expound on something else, Deb. Okay? Educators obviously know how important pre-K is. And, again, the toolkit is available. And it's I'm having a little trouble getting it on the whatever saying, the URL on site, but it's just spinning for some reason, but I'll get it up there. All right. But so please access it, the AASA Early Learning Toolkit. You can just Google that. All right. But, Deb, I'm curious. Post-pandemic, money's tight. I know we got a lot of dollars coming in from the feds. And I just want you to talk about, from a national perch like you are, how are we doing on early childhood, pre-K and then pre-pre-K, however you want to say that, birth to five, so to speak? How are we doing? What's the outlook? Deb.
I think it's probably a multifaceted answer. I think there is certainly a lot of positive energy in this space right now. I think the pandemic shone a light on an area that has been kind of making noise in the background for a long time. And all of a sudden, parents are at home trying to figure out how to balance everything and had an epiphany of the value of that. And, you know, we had teachers trying to still deliver, you know, you had places like Head Start that serve children living in poverty, making sure they still got meals and materials and things like that. I mean, that kind of attention certainly helps to raise to a level of visibility to the average person. You've got people citing brain research like Peter cited a minute ago that generally people didn't know. And now they all realize that this is all happening really early and it's important.
Yeah.
On the other side, however, and I think Peter and Eddie have probably at least seen some of this in their own spaces. I know a lot of school systems are seeing this, certainly Head Start and other early learning spaces are. We've got parents still keeping their kids at home. So we've got an interesting shift, and we're not sure. We're doing a lot of putting our ear to the ground on this to try to figure out, is it still a fear of having kids in classrooms? Is it just trying to juggle so much that they think, well, I'll just wait until they have to go to school. I don't know, but I would say that part of what we have in a challenge in front of us, both in the school systems and in the early learning space that isn't in a school system per se, is to reinvigorate parents' level of confidence in taking their kiddos to Head Start, to pre-K, and making sure that we don't lose that momentum. So that part, I think, is really important. And I think that, you know, who knows where the budget is going to go exactly right now, but I do think we're going to see, whatever the outcome is, I think we're going to see, you know, more attention in the early learning space than maybe we have in the past. And so I think it's a really positive outlook. I love the fact that we see superintendents like Peter and Eddie and this whole group here, this early learning cohort, spending time on this. This is where they're prioritizing their time. And it's pretty incredible to see happen. And I think that's a sign of really good things to come.
I would agree with you. And I sure hope you're right. And you touched on something that Peter touched on. And I always say this, when I got my degree in education, it was a Bachelor of Science. All right, but they never touched on the science of learning, and if I made the neuroscience of learning, that wasn't even mentioned. Okay, that was a long time ago, but they don't do enough of it now. All right, and we have to understand learning, and although teaching, everybody knows it's kind of an art, but it has to be a science. There was a science behind education. There was a science behind learning. And we're learning more and more, and as we learn more and more, we learn how important early learning is to get these kids on the right track right away. Okay? It's just so darn important, all the work that you're doing, and I hope this toolkit is shared by, there are over 12,000 school districts. I hope you get 12,000 toolkits out there. Okay, Eddie? Get 12,000 out there. But I understand Jimmy's going to make you lick the stamps. He's going to make you lick the stamps. Is that okay?
So Larry, I'm going to leave you with three numbers, and they're not your middle school locker combination, okay? So the three numbers I'm going to leave you with, okay, are 2, 15, and 30, okay? The executive summary is 4 pages long, and it is amazing. So that will be on that website. AASA Early Learning Cohort. Take the 2 minutes to read the 4-page executive summary. Then, if you want, you can read the actual toolkit. That takes about 15 minutes of your time. And for those data nerds like me and Peter and Deb who love getting into this, there's 30 minutes that you can read the digital extended version that has 8 bonus pages of Ellen Galinsky's work. And I specifically wrote them specifically for this toolkit. It is a can't-miss opportunity. Remember, 2, 15, 30. Those are the numbers you need to remember.
Eddie, you should have gone into sales, but in a way you are in sales because you're selling all these great stuff that people have done to be missing it. I mean, it's just great. And I have to tell you something funny. This was hysterical. I was going to sleep the other night, and for some reason, Eddie, I don't know how you managed to bring this up, my junior high school locker combination popped into my head. Okay?
Unbelievable.
Honestly,
is it 2:15:30?
Right. No, if that was that, I really agree. That would be. I'll give it.
That would be
great. It was 3:27:32 on the combination.
Well,
now, how I remember that.
Change
about 47
your spiel, Eddie. It's now 3:27:32.
I feel like I'm reading a Dan Brown novel. I mean, it's unbelievable. Okay, you know, what's going on here? Pops into my head out of 50 years later. Unbelievable. All right.
Thank you, guys.
You guys are great. You're doing great work, okay? And I'm going to be in touch with all of you, okay? Deb, nice
Thank
to know you.
So
Thank
much.
You for being here. This was great, okay? And Peter and Eddie, you guys take care, okay? Enjoy them apples out there, Peter. Apple
Sounds
World.
Good. Thank you, Larry.
Okay.
Take
Eddie,
care.
We'll be talking soon. Be good. Thanks,
All right.
Deb.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, you too.
Bye,
Bye.
Everybody. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
All right. That's great. And Jimmy Minicello, now responsible for the Ukraine incursion. Thank you. Okay. He didn't really do that. All right. Jimmy's the communications director over at AASA. All right. And you can learn more about that at AASA.org, School Superintendent Association. Just Google their early learning toolkit. You'll be able to pick right up on it. Okay, we're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs, Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.